This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Mary Louise Kelly in Washington. Neil Conan is away. President Obama is in the middle of his term, and he finds himself at a crossroads. After a grueling election in November, his party suffered major losses, including the majority in the House of Representatives. The economy has grown a little in fits and spurts, and yet unemployment continues to hobble many, and then overseas. Mr. Obama's grappling with two wars, a growing challenge from China, and the nuclear ambitions of countries like Iran and North Korea. Back home, this week's rampage in Arizona marks the latest unexpected tragedy he's been forced to deal with. Well, with all this on his plate, there are plenty of people who would like to be helpful and offer advice. On the op-ed pages and on political talk shows, there's a chorus of would-be counselors telling Mr. Obama what he should do. Today, we want to hear some of those shoulds, and we want to hear from you. What one thing do you think the president should do as he enters the next phase of his presidency? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. That's npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the show, an argument that the president should push to get ROTC back on Ivy League campuses. But first, we're going to start with Boyce Watkins. He joins us from member station WAER in Syracuse. He's an assistant professor of finance at the university there. Welcome, Boyce Watkins.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to start with the open letter that you wrote to President Obama. This was more of a must-do than a should-do, and your argument was that President Obama must address black unemployment. Explain.
I think that what's going on right now is that with all the economic stress that our country has been facing, the president has certainly had a lot on his plate, and a lot of people who have an opinion on how he can best stimulate the economy. But one of the problems with the approaches that have been taken thus far is that our attention has been taken away from dealing with the persistent problem of economic inequality in America. As it stands, African-American unemployment is typically about twice what white unemployment happens to be. And even with the recent reductions in unemployment, the gap in unemployment between whites and blacks continues to grow. And so the point that I wanted to make to the president very respectfully, because I've always supported him, as do many members of the African-American community, is that there's a difference between dealing with economic despair in our nation and dealing with economic inequality. And I think that we have to recognize that difference if we're going to move forward as a country.
You write pretty compellingly about some of the economic reasons to address black unemployment. Do you think for the White House there is also a political incentive to address the issue?
Well, based on my constituency, which would be the African American community, there's a huge incentive in the sense that African Americans are amongst the president's most steadfast supporters. Mm. The problem, though, is that when you support a politician almost to the point of falling in love with him, that can move you down to the bottom of that politician's priority list. And as a result, it's been incredibly rare that you've heard the words black man, black woman, or even poor people come out of the mouths of anyone in the Obama administration over the past year. And my argument is that we've got to somehow put a voice on black suffering. Not only were African Americans hit with the highest unemployment rates, the truth is that the unemployment rates in the black community are actually still going to be at the recession level that whites are experiencing now, even after the recession's over. So there's sort of an understanding amongst black people that we have to remain quiet in order to help Obama succeed. But I argue the opposite, that not only are we suffering, but we also have the lowest cushion of wealth to protect ourselves when we lose our jobs. So there's a lot going on that the president nor any member of Congress is really talking about.
Okay. We're speaking here with Boyce Watkins of Syracuse University. And let me draw a caller into the conversation. This is Jeff calling from Nevada City, California. Hey, Jeff.
Hi. My comment is a little bit different, but as far as stimulating the economy, I would like to see fiber to the home. And I think if you got the fiber optics, that last mile to the home, you'd see internet speeds boost by a factor of well over 1,000, and you'd see countless new jobs and new services available over the internet that are not available today.
Let me ask you to respond to that, Boyce Watkins, and let me see if I can help square the circle between what our caller here is asking about in terms of fiber optics and the African American issue that we've been speaking about. Talk to me, Boyce Watkins, about the broadband divide. This is a big issue within the African American community.
Yeah, it is. And I see the digital divide as being a continuation of the broad educational divide. And effectively, the holy trinity, if you will, of struggle within the black community pretty much goes into three areas, and that's education, economic inequality, and the criminal justice system, all of which are related. You know, many black kids are not being educated. Black boys are several times more likely than the white kids to be put into special education, even when they are just as smart. For example, I was placed in special education, even though I'm a professor today. The only thing that saved me was somebody said, hey, he's not as dumb as you think. He's just a little different. And when, you know, these young men and young women hit the workforce without an education, they obviously can't compete as readily in the job market. And when they can't compete in the job market, many of them become marginalized, which opens the door for mass incarceration. And as a result, black men are about seven times more likely than white men to go to prison. In fact, one out of every three black boys in the United States born this decade is expected to go to state or federal prison or local jail at some point in his lifetime. So when you talk about these divides, we have to start the goal of addressing these divides by acknowledging the divides and being courageous in terms of how we confront those divides. And unfortunately for President Obama, because there's so much of a distracting environment going on right now with his attacks from the right and some of his attacks from the left, I think that it's sort of fallen off his plate.
Okay. Thanks so much for your call, Jeff. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
And Boyce Watkins, talk to me about the risk that I'm sure many of the president's advisors worry about if he were to follow your counsel and really engage on issues of race relations, the risk of getting mired in a topic that is so controversial in the United States and losing sight of other priorities that he set for his presidency.
Well, the risk is quite obvious. I mean, we saw what happened last year with the Henry Louis Gates debacle, where the president made a statement that I felt was a little ill-advised and a little bit irresponsible. It was probably the only time I watched President Obama and said, okay, you're being a little bit sloppy. And it wasn't because he addressed the issue. It was because I felt that he hit the issue at the wrong time in the wrong context without sufficient preparation, and as a result he paid a huge price for that. And that was in my memory the point where he started becoming labeled as this sort of crazy radical president, you know, by members of the right, which he's everything but radical. I think he's quite rational in his approach to leadership, and so my argument would be that if you're going to address this touchy issue of race, which has divided our country for so many centuries, you have to be really careful, and you have to really pick your battles, and you have to make sure that they're battles that you can win. For example, I think addressing mass incarceration, for example, with the Georgia prison strike, which is still sort of happening right now, I think that's a great opportunity to say, you know, why do we incarcerate more of our citizens than any country in the world? Why are so many millions of black families being destroyed when their primary breadwinners are being taken away for long periods of time? Why can't they get jobs or get an education or vote once they've served their time in prison? And how does this affect that community? I think that it would take a little bit of courage for the president and the administration to address this issue. But sometimes as a politician, there's a point where you have to decide, am I going to say things that are going to get me more votes, or am I going to just do the right thing? And I think all throughout American history, we've had great leaders who've done the right thing. And I consider Obama to be a great leader. So I'm hoping that he'll follow suit.
Well, if you could advise him on what to avoid, what pitfalls to avoid in these next 2 years, what would your advice be?
Well, it would depend on what the goal is. But I think that in terms of what he would avoid as it pertains to race, I would say that there are some debates, some conversations that can be had that he doesn't have to be directly involved in. I think right now he's got a very small margin of error. I think that he will be in a much stronger position as a leader once the economy improves. To some extent, being the president of the United States is like being the quarterback of a football team. You get an extraordinary amount of the blame when the team loses, and you get far too much credit when the team wins. And so I think that as our economic team, so to speak, starts to win, people will start to realize that Obama is a strong president. So I wouldn't necessarily say that there's anything he should avoid. I think that the broader objective would be to make sure you approach everything carefully and with adequate responsibility, which I think he does most of the time.
All right. Let me let one more caller get a quick word in. This is Bob. He's on the line from Berlin, Maryland. Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Great. Thanks.
I think one thing he's proven, at least to me, as a person who did not vote for him, that he's a great communicator and he can get people to talk to one another on both sides of the aisle. And I think that's something that he really needs to expound upon and build on that. I think he can do great things. I think he can be one of the greatest presidents we've had easily. He can easily be one of the worst presidents we have, but I think his ability to get people to talk to each other and talk to him is something he can build on.
All right. Thanks so much for your comment, Bob. We appreciate your calling. We've got an email that's come in. This is from Jay in Norman, Oklahoma, and he writes, Obama needs to stop moving to the center. He has compromised his position over and over again, from health care to the stimulus package to offshore drilling, and yet his opponents, the Republicans, have not given him any respect. When will he learn that the Republicans will oppose him, no matter how liberal or centrist he is? So two very different views there, and we've been chatting all of this through with Boyce Watkins, who is an assistant professor of finance at Syracuse University. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we appreciate your time. There are lots of other suggestions, of course, for what President Obama should do on all sorts of matters. We'll get to some more of those in a moment. Up next, Danielle Pletka offers her advice on Iran and other foreign policy issues. What one thing do you think the president should do as he enters the next phase of his presidency? Call us, 800-989-8255, or you can email talk@npr.org. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Stay with us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. We're hearing advice for President Obama as he heads into the second half of this term. Advice on the economy, foreign policy, on working with Congress, and running for re-election. What one thing do you think the president should do as he enters the next phase of his presidency? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. You can email us. We're at talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. That's npr.org. And you click on Talk of the Nation. Well, Danielle Pletka has a few should-dos for the president, many of them having to do with China's rising power and with curbing the rise of Iran. She's vice president for foreign and defense policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute here in Washington, and she's with us today from a studio there. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Let me jump right in with your view on Iran. And you have argued that President Obama's policy on Iran is failing, to put it bluntly. You say diplomacy hasn't worked, sanctions have not worked as you see it. What would you like to see the president do differently on Iran?
Well, the first thing I should say is, you know, it's a great luxury sitting in a think tank or a university and giving our sage advice to the president of the United States, no matter what party that president has to come from.
Sure.
I think that all of us appreciate, but perhaps we don't say quite often enough, it's not exactly the simplest job in the world. And so the challenges are very real. It's nice to sit and Monday morning quarterback from my little studio here. But I recognize that a lot of this is difficult. A lot of the criticism of the president really comes down to a similar theme, and that is one of retreat. I think that the president and the United States is perceived to be in retreat, not just by China, not just by Iran, but even by our friends, by the Europeans. We are taking a much lower profile. Part of that has to do with the economy, and it's very understandable. But I think part of it is a conscious decision on the part of this president not to have America be an exceptional, a leading power. And I think that's a big mistake.
We're going to take a call now. This is Ben. He's calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Ben. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. If you don't mind, I just have one quick question to ask before I make my point. Where is Neil Conan right now?
Neil Conan is at a doctor's appointment, and I'm very happily keeping his chair warm for him. He'll be back tomorrow. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, then just the point that I want to make is that I really think that Obama needs to put his money where his mouth is as far as campaign to bring troops home from the Middle East. It's right now we're fighting a losing battle right there, as we have been since the start of it, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he made lots of promises during his campaign to bring troops home and to just end our involvement in the Middle East, and I think that that should be his next step.
Daniel Pletka, I know you want to jump in and respond to that one. The proposal here, get the U.S. troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan. What do you say?
Well, the president did campaign on getting our troops out of Iraq, and in fact, we are drawing down our troops in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we're able to do that is because we have achieved most of our goals there. And the reason we did that is on the backs of American men and women and American commanders and American taxpayers who made that happen. I think we're going to leave Iraq in a good situation. And I hope that the conditions are going to dictate that's possible. That is not the case in Afghanistan. I think that one of the things that I wish the president would do more is not just make the right decisions about great commanders in Iraq. And we have a great commander in General Dave Petraeus, one of the greatest leaders of our military leaders of our era.
And now in command in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Now in command in Afghanistan. I think the president has made a number of courageous and wise decisions when it comes to our troop strength in Afghanistan, when it comes to sustaining our presence there. I don't think that's been easy for him because of folks like our caller just now. The people who voted for him don't necessarily want to see it, and he's done the right thing. What he hasn't done is he hasn't gotten out and explained to the American people why he's made these decisions, why we're there, why we're fighting, why he believes we ought to stay. And that kind of leadership is really imperative, not just from a Republican president, but from a Democratic president whose base really does need to be persuaded about the things that the decisions he's made.
All right. Thanks very much to you, Ben, for that question. I'm going to leap right to another caller who has another foreign policy question for you, Danielle. And this is Rob. You're on the line from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
First of all, I'd like to take an extreme exception with your contributor from Enterprise's assertion that the president is making a purposeful move towards or away from American exceptionalism. I have to that would be the furthest thing from the truth. I would also say that the president should, at this time, withdraw all domestic and military aid from the state of Israel, contingent upon a full settlement freeze and a real movement towards a two-state solution.
So you would like to see a freeze on aid to Israel until those issues are resolved. Danielle Pletka, what do you think?
I'm not a big fan of aid to Israel, honestly. I think Israeli per capita income is sufficient that our aid to that country is nothing more than a vote of confidence in the democratic government that shares our values and that exists in that region. So, as far as the aid on its own merits is concerned, I think it's neither here nor there. As a bludgeon, well, let me just say, I'm not a big fan of using aid as a bludgeon. First of all, I don't think it's terribly effective. I always find it ironic that people reserve their vitriol for this small state of 6+ million people in the Middle East, don't pay too much attention to the Saudis or Saudi Arabias, the Syrias, the Yemens, which are far more of a challenge to our national interest. But, everybody has the right to express their opinions, no matter how baseless they are.
Rob, you want to jump back in? Sure.
The president really has it dead right when it comes to Iran. After the late 70s and the Iran-Iraq war, the demographics there have shifted so significantly that really we only must wait until the old guard has died and the young Twitter generation has claimed the reins of power in Iran.
All right, lots of topics we could talk about there with Iran, Israel, some of the thorniest issues in the president's foreign policy portfolio. Rob, thanks very much for your call.
And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Daniel Pletko. One last very big subject I want to raise with you, and that is China. What should President Obama do about China in the next 2 years?
One of the things that's really struck me over the last couple of years of the Obama presidency is the changing position of the administration on China. I think the president came in with a fairly rosy view about partnership with China, which has changed substantially over the last couple of years. And frankly speaking, I've been happy to see that change. I think China represents a huge economic opportunity for the United States. We should make no mistake. But the role that China has played, not just in the Pacific, vis-a-vis our forces there, threatening our ships, threatening our allies, and attempting to intimidate a whole variety of its neighbors through regional forums like ASEAN, but also the role that it's played in not reining in its client state, North Korea, really should be a wake-up call for us to the intentions that the Chinese have. And while we have the Secretary of Defense there right now, we've got Hu Jintao coming shortly to visit with the president, I think the president needs to be fairly assertive in suggesting that we view these things as China's responsibility. They can be a responsible player in the world, but we're not going to lie and suggest that they're responsible when, in fact, they're not.
All right. Thanks very much, Danielle.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Danielle Pletka. She's Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, and she joined us from an AEI studio here in Washington, D.C. One other view to bring you, this is an op-ed written by Juan Cole, a professor of history at the University of Michigan, and he writes on his blog on this subject of the dangers of pressuring Iran. Juan Cole writes, "The Obama administration was successful in tightening the financial noose on Iran during 2010, but Iran could fight back like a cornered rat. On June 9th, it succeeded in pushing through a United Nations Security Council tightening of sanctions. Just this week, India announced that it would cease allowing transfers of payments to Iran via the Asian Clearing Union system. But the sanctions won't prevent India from buying Iranian petroleum, of which it imports about 400,000 barrels a day, with petroleum prices firming up as Asia and Germany come out of the economic doldrums. The Iranian state will have a large cushion against American pressure. The danger in the increased U.S. pressure on Iran," this is Juan Cole writing, "is that it will take revenge by sabotaging U.S. grand strategy in the Middle East. Iran is already blocking fuel shipments to Afghanistan, which likely hurts NATO and the U.S. as much as it hurts the Afghans. Iran could easily also play spoiler in Lebanon via its ally, the Hezbollah militia, and in Iraq as U.S. troops draw down. Obama is engaged in a tightrope walk, and if he puts too much pressure on Iran, he could easily be pushed off." Those are the views of Professor Juan Cole from the University of Michigan, writing on his blog, Informed Comments. Well, we're going to switch gears a little bit and speak to Martin Frost. He has an argument for compromise and thinks it's essential to the president's chances for re-election. Martin Frost is a former Democratic member of Congress. He represented Texas, and he joins us now by phone from his office here in D.C. Welcome, Congressman.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
We're glad to have you with us. Well, we're talking this hour about what President Obama should do, and many of your Obama should-dos came true in the lame duck Congress, the deal on extending Bush-era tax cuts, for example.
Well, I always thought there was a compromise that could be made. I do think that the president made a good deal. He got benefits for people who extension of unemployment benefits, and he also got some things that are very important for job creation. The 100% expensing of purchase of new equipment this year, a 50% expensing of new equipment next year. I mean, these are some things that have a chance of really jump-starting the economy, and also the 2% reduction on the withholding on payroll taxes. So I think the president, while he had to compromise with the Republicans, he didn't get everything he wanted, that he made a pretty good compromise, and I think you're going to see more of this in the months ahead.
Well, what do you think he should focus on next?
Well, Right now, of course, we have this tragedy involving the shooting out in Arizona, and we have to get past that. And I hope that the president and the speaker will both be able to prevail on people just to tone down the rhetoric here. Just there's been too much hate speech in this country in recent years. And I think that the new speaker has been taking some positive steps. I think the president ought to encourage that. I know the president's going to go out there to Arizona. So we have to get through this. This was a very wrenching experience for the country. It's, and I think the president will do the right thing. We'll be able to comfort the families and show that the country won't tolerate this type of activity. When Congress comes back, and they'll be back next week, the first thing is health care. And what we understand is that this is all theater at this point. The Republicans know they can't repeal health care. They may well. They'll pass it in the House. I don't think they'll even get two-thirds. And basically, the president should just kind of take that for what it is, that this is theater on their part, not take it too seriously, but indicate that if there are some things that could be improved in the bill, that he's willing to work with Republicans, both in the House and the Senate, to make it an even better bill. And whether the Republicans will ever come around on that, but I think it would be wise for him to at least acknowledge that, well, maybe there are some changes that could be made without destroying what Congress passed, without undoing all the good that was in it, but at least to acknowledge that we ought to take a long look at it and see if we can make some improvements in the next year or two.
All right.
And then energy policy is a place where the president has a real chance, I think, to have some bipartisan cooperation. We've put aside, Congress is not going to pass the cap and trade plan. We know that. It didn't pass last Congress. But there are a lot of good things that can be done, and maybe the president can work with the Republicans in terms of encouraging increased use of natural gas for vehicles, encouraging electric batteries for cars and other vehicles, increasing other forms of alternative energy sources. This is an area where there should be some bipartisanship, and there's some other areas, too.
All right. Plenty of areas for the president to focus on there. We're speaking with former Congressman Martin Frost, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I want to bring a caller into this conversation, and on the line from Grand Rapids, Michigan, Catherine, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. Thank you. What's your comment?
Well, I'm actually in Lansing right now. I've been driving for a bit.
We've had you on hold so far, and you're in a different town.
Oh, so worth it. I think my biggest Obama should for this next term coming up is going on the informational offensive. I think that the Republican Party has done a really good job of kind of keeping him on the defense for the last 2 years, and that's really kind of taken his ability to really talk about the issues that he has been working out off the table. And if he could go into the next 2 years talking about what he is doing, talking about why, I think that would do a lot domestically to just increase faith in his presidency.
I think that's a very good idea, and a lot of people have urged him to do that. He just kind of he took a low profile. He kind of just said, well, let Congress work on these areas that he's identified, but then he really didn't sell the package after it was passed by Congress. And I hope that he will not do that this time. I hope that next time you pass something like health care, that he goes out and immediately starts telling people why it was good. He still has a chance to do that on health care, but on other areas too, he needs to take the initiative. I don't disagree with you at all. I think one of the other areas that I hope he will speak to is education, because you're going to have a big push on the part of the Republicans to cut to try and do something about the deficit. And I hope the president will take the be on the aggressive here, be on the offensive here, and say we cannot cut education. We can't be competitive with the rest of the world if we don't do something about public education in this country. And I think that's an area where he ought to do exactly what you suggested. He shouldn't let the Republicans have the initiative on that.
Congressman, just briefly, is there an inherent contradiction here between going on the offensive and searching for compromise?
No, not at all. I mean, he needs to stake out what his positions are and why he thinks these are important. There'll be areas where he can compromise, and he should. I'm not suggesting that he should just we should have 2 years of inaction, 2 years of deadlock, but he needs to make his case. and then have a conversation with the Republicans. Let them know that he's serious. But I think unless he draws a line in certain areas, he's got real problems. You can do both, but I think it would be tragic for the country if he let the Republicans make major cuts in education spending right now, because you've had test scores that show that we don't compete very well with the other industrialized countries in the world, and that's where he can make his case.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for your call, Catherine. Thanks for your time, Congressman. We've been speaking with former Congressman Martin Frost, a former Democrat from Texas. Coming up, the debate over ROTC and elite universities. That's ahead. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We'll